Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Asprilla, his time is right. Asprilla, yes!
Faustino Asprilla once summed up his philosophy.
Lots of sex, no rules, and pure life.
Oh, and Asprilla has elbowed him.
The Newcastle cult hero boozed on the team bus, brought a gun to training, and faced down bloodthirsty drug lords. Meet Colombia's finest export. Welcome back to The Upshot. I'm Jack. Joined by Zach, as ever.
Hello.
And breaking up our little rhyming couplet is returning guest, Seamus O'Reilly. Welcome back.
Hello, thank you for having me again.
Listeners will remember Seamus from our Steve Bruce episode, where he brought deep knowledge of the literary canon. So I guess Faustino Asprilla might be a slightly different proposition, but you must have memories of the great man.
Oh, I have a lot of memories. We're going to get into just how detailed they are. And he is, unlike Steve Bruce, who was a literary purveyor, Faustino Asprilla is kind of like a literary character. He's like a folkloric character, I think, in a lot of ways. So a lot of this episode, I think, will be me trying to confirm things that I've heard with your much better research.
What, from the sort of the myths that are told in Colombia?
Some of which seem that they cannot possibly all be true of one man.
I believe that they are. I mean, I guess people who remember him from the mid-90s will remember the cartwheel celebration, the silky skills, a famous night against Barcelona. But yeah, this fella has some serious off-field antics as well to go with the magic on the pitch.
It's from a different era, really.
Yeah, it's pure 90s Premier League, isn't it? When like foreign signings were still quite a new thing, is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think so. I think he's probably seen as quite exotic, and especially because he came from Serie A, which at the time was like the most glamorous league in the world with the best teams, the best players. And I mean, he already had a reputation as a bit of a nutter before he arrived, and then definitely lived up to that.
Zach, do you want to kick us off then?
Yeah, so we're going to kick things off in Colombia. So Faustino Asprilla was born in Tuluá. He started out a local youth team in Cali, and he had a bit of a reputation as being very talented, but also very temperamental. So he'd sometimes just walk off the pitch in the middle of the matches and slag his teammates off, saying that they're not good enough. So he got subbed off for this reason one time, and in protest, he appeared 5 minutes later, completely naked, sat in the stands.
That'll get him.
Yeah. So he ends up signing for Atlético Nacional, who are one of the top teams in Colombia. But at this point, they were bankrolled by Pablo Escobar. So he didn't openly own the team, but he was like sort of funding them behind the scenes, and he really built like a team of stars there. So they had Asprilla, they also had René Higuita, the Scorpion Kick goalkeeper. I think we're going to do an episode at some point about narco football, so I won't go into it too much, but the season before they signed Asprilla, they won the Copa Libertadores for the first time, and yeah, I won't tell the full story, but suffice to say it contained numerous suitcases of cash and kidnapped referees.
It wasn't just that, you know, Escobar was a, you know, hometown boy and he loves this club. There was also that, you know, it was literally a laundering thing for it. It wasn't just, I'm really rich and here is I love football. It was also, there was money moving through it as a sort of a cleaning operation.
Allegedly. Spend it on Faustino Asprilla.
Yeah.
Asprilla actually has his own story of a run-in with Escobar. So he says that Escobar arranged for his cronies to hijack Asprilla's motorbike while he was driving to training. So he had this like big fuck off motorbike, and Escobar was apparently worried that Asprilla would have an accident or something. So his solution was to get some guys to rob him of it at the roadside, which you do think like he could just ask him to maybe not.
Yeah, is there an option B here that we haven't examined?
Still, bit of a bastard move from Escobar.
Yeah, he was famously more carrot than stick, more stick than carrot. Yeah. So Asprilla basically catches wind of this plot to rob his motorbike. So he arranges for he gives the motorbike to his brother, and his brother takes it up off upstate. In the article that's really about this, it also says Asprilla lived with Pablo Escobar, which I then looked into and I couldn't find anything else about. So I'm not sure if this was just a dodgy Google Translate, but
oh, is it translated out of Spanish?
Out of Spanish.
Well, so
yeah.
It could just be like an idiom, like he was living.
Yeah,
I think
maybe like he lived in his.
I think we have to pursue. The angle that it was a sitcom-style arrangement of Tino and Pablo.
Catedral.
Pablo's opening the fridge. He's like, Tino, you ate all of the oranges again. And that kind of thing.
Chuck another $1 million on the fire, Tino.
I'm freezing. Do you have $1 million?
Yes, I do. So in 1992, after 3 years at Atletico Nacional, Asprilla signs for Parma in Serie A for $11 million. He's actually, when he moves there, he's registered officially as a construction worker because that was the only way he could get an Italian visa.
That's right, because he had visa trouble then as well getting to England as well, didn't he?
Yeah, because of the conviction.
That firearms conviction, yeah. Yes, that's right. So both times, he's a construction worker.
He's a construction worker, so I don't know if they got him on like...
Parma, like,
leaky,
yeah, we've got this great...
away as well.
A hard hat at corners.
So when he arrives there, he moves into a building with Gianfranco Zola, who's like the star player of Parma at that point. And Zola describes him as on a constant search for trouble. so they live in this building in Parma, and there's quite a lot of elderly people living in the same building. But Tino causes quite a few problems by blasting out pounding music at all times of the night. So they get quite a lot of complaints about this. One of the complaints is that the old folks are struggling to distinguish what time of day it is. Because they're like, oh, music is pounding. It must be, afternoon.
To be fair, Asprilla is probably having the same problem.
Yeah, for different reasons.
Zola tells this other story of one time Tino just doesn't show up to training. And the manager's like, well, where the fuck is he? And sends somebody around to his house to go and wake him up. And they get there and Asprilla is nowhere to be seen. And they're driving back to training and they spot him asleep, curled up by the side of the road. He'd been on a night out and had been heading home and had then just got a bit sleepy and had just curled up on the roadside, which is still there in the morning.
That is a sensational decision.
Yeah. If you're a Parma fan and you're just driving down the road and you're like, is that Tino Asprilla?
Yeah.
Or $11 million stroke.
Just having a little disco nap on the side of the road.
There was another time he turned up really late for training and was super hungover. And the manager again was like really pissed off with him, was asking what was up. And he just turned to him and he goes, hey, I thought I was still on Colombian time. which I think all the players, it went down well with the players, but less well with the manager. So after training, they do their training session. He manages to get through it. And they go back into the dressing room and the manager comes in and calls him out for a meeting in his office. So Tino is just expecting a bit of a dressing down, maybe a fine or something like that. And instead the manager beats the shit out of him. So there's a Colombian newspaper report that says Scala's the manager. Scala sent for him. He closed the door and the only thing that could be heard were the noises caused by the player's body bouncing against the cabinets.
Fucking hell. Because he's just tossing him against the wall.
Yeah, sounds like it. He also gets into a bit of trouble with the local authorities. So, summer 1992, he has 5 separate driving accidents. One of them involves him driving the wrong way up a one-way street. Another time, he leaves his BMW in front of a red light for 2 days.
Well, I mean, that's bad on the red light. Because that means that the red light's been on for 2 days. That's bad.
Yeah.
That's bad.
I don't know if it was red for 2 days.
so he's just left it in the middle of the road.
Yeah, I imagine him just like being a bit late, and then you know it's like you get stuck at a red. It's like fuck. Like, just hops out to run the last leg of the journey, and then just leaves it.
Didn't Jermaine Pennant do something similar in Zaragoza? He left
it at the airport.
He left it at the train station and just like, yeah, no, it's fine. Like,
for 9 months.
Yes.
With the keys were on the passenger seat.
Amazing.
That first season at Parma, though, is a historic one for them. So they have this famous European run. They get to the final of the Cup Winners' Cup. And Asprilla really stars in this run. So in the semi-final, he scores twice, and they beat Atletico Madrid 2-1. But disaster strikes, and he misses the final. So the story that he tells the club is that he's had a little accident at home and cut his leg on a broken bottle. It means he's not going to be able to play. The truth that comes out a few years later is slightly different. So he was actually back in Colombia. He says he was visiting his mum, and he was driving, and this bus like cut him up, like cut into his lane. And there's like a little minor collision. He bumps into the bus, and he gets out to remonstrate with the bus driver, and goes over, and I think the bus driver just sees him, this like mental bloke coming towards him, and like instantly like shuts the doors of the bus. Tino's like banging on the door, eventually kicks the door through, this like glass door, and gashes his leg really badly. So yeah, has to like come back to Parma and be like, oh, sorry, so drop the ketchup bottle.
Like, just to think about that, how much force you would need to get through the glass on a bus door. As a professional footballer who uses your legs professionally, like a week or two before, you know, the biggest game of your career to that point, it's a beautiful snapshot.
Apparently, the president of Parma said that after that incident, he saw Asprilla driving around Parma on his motorbike with his leg in a cast.
The week of the Cup Winners' Cup final. Yeah,
maybe he was. I think he was celebrating the because they won the final. They beat Antwerp in the final. So I like to think it was him just like there with his Parma flag on the motorbike with his leg in a
medal on.
Yeah. Zola did an interview where he was asked who was more mental, Maradona or Asprilla, and he was just like, Asprilla, hands down.
Really?
Oh, wow.
Well, more unpredictable and nuts. Yeah.
Another is that shortly after, back in Italy, it's New Year's Eve, and he's out celebrating with some friends in a bar, and the clock ticks past midnight, and to celebrate, Tino pulls out a gun and shoots 8 times into the ceiling.
Are they just in someone's house?
No, I think they're in a bar or like a club or something. And obviously, like, nobody's expecting this, so all the other punters like scatter. He ends up getting arrested for that, and
like, I'm shocked. Like, yeah. Like, of course he should have been arrested 45 times. Almost every single thing we said, including just sitting in the stands naked at a football match. I don't think you're allowed to do that.
Yeah, well, the Parma directors do bail him out. They pay his bail fee.
Oh, that would be who's
getting. He was asked about it afterwards. And he said, "What? 3 shots at New Year's? It's nothing.
Like it's tradition. Like it's 3 shots of a drink."
Yeah. But for all of his off-field scrapes, he's starring on the pitch. So when the 1994 World Cup rolls around, hopes are pretty high. Colombia are looking really good. So during qualifying, they top their group. They have this famous win over Argentina in Buenos Aires. Before that game, Tino had actually been told by the manager that he was going to be on the subs bench. And he stormed out of the team's hotel and told one of his teammates, "Being a substitute is bad for my image." They do end up starting him in that match. And he scores twice. It's a historic 5-0 win. So Argentina at this point were really good. They got to the last two World Cup finals. They'd won the last two Copa Americas as well. It was actually the first time Argentina had ever lost at home in a World Cup qualifier. Wow. And Colombia have spanked them 5-0. So everyone's thinking they've actually got a chance in the World Cup. Pele tips them to win it.
Well, that's the first sign of death.
Some terrible shouts over the years.
Yeah, almost exclusively, really. Yeah.
They're drawn in a group with Switzerland, Romania and the USA. They lose their first two matches to Romania and the US. They beat Switzerland in their final game, but by that point it's too late. The game against the USA obviously featured this famous own goal by Andres Escobar, no relation to Pablo, that obviously ended in tragedy. So 6 days later, Escobar was outside a bar in Medellin, and somebody drove up and shot him 12 times. Apparently, his girlfriend said that the killer shouted, "Goal," like, "Goal, goal, goal," with every shot, which is quite dark.
Pretty
quite,
grim, yeah.
Quite Hollywood, though, in a way.
Anyway, back in Italy, Tino wastes no time distracting himself from the disappointment of the World Cup, and he becomes infatuated with a woman called Petra Scharbach, who is described as an Italian porn queen.
Queen. Royal
queen, yeah, not does just that mean a porn
like,
star.
Does that mean, like, when I think of porn king, I think of a, like, grubby East End gangster who runs some grotty cinemas?
Yeah.
No, I think she's a star. So he met her in a strip club where she was performing.
Right. That's cleared that up.
So, yeah. He's married at this point, I should say. But he showers her with expensive gifts and bombards her with phone calls. For her part, she says that nothing ever happened and that she kind of rejected his advances. There was a line in the newspaper report that I read that was like, she rejected his advances because she had a boyfriend who drove a Porsche.
Nice.
Okay, well,
nice and transactional.
You can't compete with that, really. No. But stories of this dalliance get back to his wife, and she leaves him and returns to Colombia with his son.
And that's like the end of their marriage, isn't it?
I don't remember hearing about her again.
No.
I mean, at this point, he's being linked with a move to the Premier League with Kevin Keegan's Newcastle, and there he's definitely not married at that point, I think.
No, so it's a bit of a shock transfer. I think it comes in the freezing cold winter in early 1996, and Tino suddenly rocks up. There's the famous photos. He lands. He arrives in Newcastle in the middle of a blizzard, steps off the plane, meets hundreds of fans, and he's in that fur coat.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't know how I managed to do this, considering it's such an iconic image, but I'd managed to convince myself through like false memory that it was like a sort of John Motson-style sheepskin, because the Fast Show created the character of Julio Giordio, who does wear one of those. And it was just, exactly, it's actually quite a nice coat. And it is woolen, but it's not like a sheepskin John Motson style.
Yeah, it's also not like mink, which is how I misremembered it like, you know, an American gangster where he gets given that like mink coat.
Yeah, yeah.
Look, really over the top.
Something really puffy and kind of whatever. But it's actually quite just classy.
I'd wear it.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's perfect for a blizzard in the Northeast.
I mean, look at what everyone else is wearing.
Everyone else is awful. Very frumpy cagoules, is how I'd describe. Actually, this guy's in a leather jacket.
I am disappointed to see Geordie's actually dressing for the weather.
Yeah, why are they not in shorts?
That they were just wearing t-shirts and their nipples don't even get hard.
Anyway, so Tino's look on his face is one of disbelief at this weather, because he's just come from Parma. You know, it's January, but still, he's come, having been in Colombia to Parma, he's now in the Northeast, and he looks a little bit shocked by this blizzard. And apparently he said later that he actually thought Newcastle was quite near London, and he was intending to stay in London and travel to training every day by yacht. Because I think someone told him, he was like, "Where's Newcastle?" And they were like, "Oh, it's just up the coast from London," probably just trying to get him to sign. So he was planning on boarding a boat every day, setting up the East Coast.
Sensational.
I really hope he tried that just once.
Well, I mean, we mentioned the work permit thing, so there's a bit of a fudge where he actually ends up playing his first game like the day that he flies. So is that day? Is that him landing at the airport?
Well, so he lands, and Newcastle got this game with Middlesbrough
in like 3 hours.
And Newcastle are, by the way, league leaders, so it's a big move. They're top of the league by 12 points. But Tino arrives, and they've got this game with Middlesbrough straight away. And Keegan says, basically, we took him as emergency cover. We just thought we might as well bring him. And as far as Tino knows, he's just joining the squad because he might as well. It's a good chance to kind of, you know, meet the fans and get to know his teammates. So he boards the team bus. And as he gets on, his teammates notice that he's got a sort of Londis bag with a bottle of wine in it. And everyone's like, what's going on? And Tino goes, sits at the back of the bus. You know, there's coaches where you've got four seats, you know, you could sit opposite each other, puts his feet up on the seat opposite, pops the bottle of wine open and proceeds to drink half this bottle of red on the way to the game. Because as far as he knows, he's not playing. And everyone's, you know, a bit confused by this new character.
I read somewhere that he did an interview. He's like, yeah, this is what we did in Italy because we weren't allowed to drink Coke.
That's right, yeah. And he's like, and then that was the last time. I never did it again, except for Coke, of course. And I was like, so they've just got the flip rules. I mean,
In England, he just drank Coke instead.
Because in England, they're like, yeah, you drink as much fizzy drinks and sugar as you like, but obviously no wine.
Why is wine better than Coke?
I suppose, you know,
it's sugary as well.
And also Italian culture perhaps just says, you know, a little glass of wine. Those guys all age a lot gentler than we do. True, in Northern Europe, so...
They probably didn't mean torpedo half a bottle. They probably meant sort of a small glass with a pinky raised. Anyway, he arrives, obviously fairly pissed, I assume, at least tipsy, to Teesside. And Kevin Keegan names the squad and Tino's on the bench and he sort of thinks, oh, shit, but, you know, I won't come on. But then in the second half, with Newcastle 1-0 down, Keegan thinks, fuck it, I might as well throw this guy on, see what he can do. And everyone, Tino's thinking, shit, I'm, you know, still probably fairly pissed at this point, and now I'm making my debut in the Premier League. But things could not have gone better. Tino dribbles down the left flank with a bit of crafty footwork, beats a couple of defenders, and crosses the ball in for Steve Watson, who buries it. And Newcastle go on to win. So, I mean, it's you know, you have these signings your club makes sometimes where you're a bit excited about them, and they come on, and it is just exactly as you'd hoped. They're magic from day one.
Yeah, and even just the fact that, you know, he gets the ball and runs up and he's on the sort of left channel and he does two or three completely superfluous, mesmerizing little stepovers that are almost like if you watch a crap American movie about how football looks, you know, there's always like these completely superfluous sort of surplus moves that possibly some cinematographer thought looked good. He's doing that stuff and it's working. Yeah. Crosses it in and like just boosh right back in. And then they go on to win the game.
Yeah, they do. They win the game. So he's an instant cult hero, especially when the fans learn about his antics off the pitch as well. So as far as I can tell, it's just pretty much wall-to-wall partying. Tino moves into a small village in Northumbria near Newcastle, and apparently it's just open house is the rule. Like, there's just people coming and going at all hours.
Is that local villagers or...?
As teammates report it. So I think Rob Elliott is the one who says it's open. Oh, you mean who's coming to the open house party?
Yeah.
I think anyone who turns up is welcome.
Elderly neighbours,
yeah, there's a floor-to-ceiling fridge in the bathroom. There's one night where they get hammered on brandy and all pass out, and they accidentally leave something hot on the sound system and it just melts. I think it's a sort of like boombox that you carry around. I don't know what the something hot was.
That's kind of tantalizing.
Yeah, I was thinking, you know, something you smoke, or is it like a hot plate?
Well, I think it could be literally rounds from a recently fired rifle.
Well, funny you mentioned the rifle, because according to Steve Howie, his teammate, when Tino eventually leaves the house, his landlord finds bullet holes in the walls and takes his deposit. Which has just got to be the best reason anyone's ever lost their deposit in Northumbria.
That's the least I think you could do if someone has fired bullets in your house. Like, I think that's, you got to hold your hands up there and just, that deposit's gone.
Yeah, I'm keeping your 400 quid. Yeah. I'm not going to go to the police. Is that just a party where, I guess it's Tino.
It's New Year's Eve, maybe.
You know the rules.
Yeah. And also you didn't change the bins and... I'm going to have to get a service wash. So that brings it to 460 total. But best of luck.
I noticed a scuff on the skirting board below the bullet hole.
And by the way, I checked your references. You're not a construction worker.
So I guess it's just mayhem. It's just like wild parties constantly. We actually did a story about Asprilla in our newsletter a while ago. And Scott wrote in, a reader called Scott said, I know a guy who used to work in a Newcastle bank. Every Friday, Tino came in and withdrew 18 grand in cash, flanked by two security guys. God knows what he did with the money, but I can hazard a guess.
My goodness.
I don't think it was buying polyfiller to fill in the gunshot.
Well, if it was, he would have got his deposit back.
Well, maybe, he should have considered that.
I mean, how much would he have been earning at this point? Because that's another thing which I find very nebulous is that we talked about like the influx of, you know, kind of these huge superstars and foreign players, whatever. But also the wages are going up, you know, you know, it's the following season is when Shearer is signed for 15.
Correct,
But how much would he been on? Just literally, was that just 18 grand?
Yeah,
was
that his week's
that
wages?
That was it?
It's quite old school, go to the bank and get your wages.
That to me is incredible. He's like, it's literally like you're clocking off down to Mill and you're taking out your wages, but it's £18,000 because you're just like, I don't want it to be in the bank. I want it in my pocket. I want to be riding around on my horse with it.
Maybe you got 20 and he put 2 grand in his ISA. He strikes me as the kind of guy who'd be saving for the future.
For a rainy day.
Of course, Tino's real passion is shagging. He gave an interview to 442 a few years ago, remembering his time in Newcastle, and he said, "The women were divine." I hope you're enjoying my impression.
It's like he's in the room.
It's almost a bit League of Gentlemen.
The women were divine. I had, well, I don't know how many girlfriends I had in Newcastle. I didn't even understand what they said.
I remember around this time, I'm a Newcastle fan, and he used to give interviews, and they're always via a translator. Apparently, his sort of chat-up line, if you could call it that, was to tell girls in nightclubs, "There's a party at my house afterwards, and David Ginola is there." Because obviously, David Ginola, his teammate, was the heartthrob of the whole Premier League.
Mm. You know, an objectively Frenchman, very handsome man,
very, very, with a sort of a voice to match. I would say he was the hunk of the league. And Asprilla says they'd come back and say, "Where's Ginola?" And I would respond, "Don't worry, he will be back shortly." Which is, I mean, we're getting into quite seedy territory here. So Tino's partying a lot, he's shagging, he's firing guns in his Newcastle home. But on the pitch, he's got some serious business, because Newcastle are still the league leaders. They've still got this big cushion over Man United after Tino rescued them at Middlesbrough. And their next match is Man City. And it turns out to be a 3-3 thriller, in which Tino scores a goal, he sets one up, but the game's better remembered for him after he absolutely loses his mind tussling with Man City's Keith Curl. So there's an incident in the game where Curl's like grabbing him and Tino just elbows him in the face hard. I think he breaks his nose.
It looks really sore. Like it's not a handbag situation. It's like if you saw that in like on the street or in a nightclub, you'd be like, "Oh, that's going to be trouble."
Yeah, it's nasty. Actually, we can watch it.
It's been a clash between those two all afternoon. Curl, who felt the sharp end of Asprilla's elbow, and it's not a match which finishes on a good note. Now, what does he do here, the Colombian? He uses the forehead against Curl, and the linesman could not be closer.
So Asprilla headbutts Curl at the full-time whistle. What I love about that is that the linesman literally has his hands on Asprilla, and he's still, that's how close he is to him, and he still just headbutts Curl right in front of him.
Did he get punished for that?
So he doesn't get any red card, and he doesn't get a red card or even, I think, a yellow for elbowing him in the face earlier in the game, and the tribunal gets delayed till the end of the season, at which point he gets a one-match ban.
Amazing.
And a 10-grand fine, which at the time was quite a big fine, in fairness.
But less than what he takes out from his local bank every Friday.
Precisely. So again, Tino gets away with it, but Newcastle have dropped points, and this is the moment where the title bid starts to fall apart. Newcastle start losing. I think they lose something like 5 of their next 8 games.
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing that was staggering, because this was such a huge season for me watching, because it was like a real formative one where, you know, all of the things that we all remember, you know, "I will love it if we beat them," the whole run-in, the kidology, even like Asprilla arriving and all that stuff. I think I'd forgotten just how commanding the lead was. Like 12 points. With like, is it 11 games?
Well, it was February, so yeah. So like, it's an implosion, yeah.
A complete implosion at the exact point where this, where Asprilla is dropped into the mix. And what I hadn't realised was that he wasn't this fantastic, amazing, like kind of injection of class that helped. He's to some extent was, I think, quite unfairly blamed, or the fact that he had arrived had kind of had some effect.
Yeah, I mean, this is the point where it all starts falling apart for Newcastle. They have that 4-3 thriller defeat to Liverpool, where there's that famous image of Keegan slumped over the advertising hoarding. Yeah. There's him melting down on Sky Sports.
Yeah, because that was after Alex Ferguson had said other teams aren't playing as hard against us as they do against Newcastle.
Yeah, and then he says Stuart Pearce isn't trying for Forest, I guess, because Keegan goes, "When you say things like that about a man like Stuart Pearce."
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
And then I tell you what, I would love it if we beat them.
Which they don't do. They completely fall apart. It's one of the biggest chokes in Premier League history. There's a famous defeat during that meltdown at Highbury, where Newcastle lose 2-0, and at halftime, Keegan gives a massive bollocking to all the players, which isn't really his style, but things are really starting to go wrong. And Tino gets subbed in the second half, and fearing a further bollocking, he just goes into the dressing room, showers, changes, and just jumps on a motorbike before the game's even finished and just heads to the airport. Apparently, Keegan's furious, and in the dressing room, turns to all the players, and he's like, "Can you believe this guy?" And then the following week, he calls Asprilla in for a meeting, and it's like, what the fuck? And Tino, through a translator, just says to him, look, I had a flight to catch, and it was pointless me staying because I can't understand you anyway.
I mean, I kind of rate that, though. It's like, okay, I could just stand and listen, but like, you know, people say about the hairdryer. For him, it is literally a hairdryer. It's an undiscernible, like, wall of language that he can't hear, shouted at high volume, probably with loads of, you know, effing and blinding. He's like, I'm not taking anything from this.
Is his translator not whispering in his ear? Exactly.
Just having to be the profanity translator.
Anyway, I mean, that season, it all goes wrong. Newcastle obviously famously finished second.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Throughout his time at Newcastle, Tino's making these trips back to Colombia. And as you said earlier, Zach, they tend to coincide with a bit of drama. So there's an occasion where he goes to his hometown of Tuluá and he's attending a gig by a Spanish singer. And Tino's obviously got tickets, but his mate doesn't. And he tries to sneak him in. And they get caught by a policeman who chucks his friend out. And so Tino responds by headbutting the policeman.
Lives life like GTA.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, was Colombia a bit like that at the time? Is that a trope? Is that unfair? There's another time before a big qualifier against Bolivia where Tino's back in Colombia. They're in Medellin, which is one of the most dangerous cities in the world at the time. But he's got a lot of mates there. He's having spent a lot of time in the area. And the night before the game, Tino goes out on the piss with his friends. And he's so hungover the next day, he oversleeps and shows up 9 hours late for the team meeting. So it must have been an evening kickoff. So 9 hours late must mean they were meant to meet at 8 a.m. and he bowled in at 5 p.m. I mean, that kind of thing.
Are you even late if it's 9 hours late? It's a different day.
Yeah.
I mean, Keith Gillespie, he also said a very funny thing was Faustino's career was always late. You read about like, oh, if Marcus Rashford or whoever, you know, Mesut Ozil is late for training, it's like, you're fine. 2 weeks wages. It's like super, super serious. He was 20 minutes late for every single training session that he ever had with him. He said 20 past 10, 20 past 10, 20 past 10. And he said the only time he was ever on time was he came in at 9:20 once because he didn't realize the clock had changed. So he was 40 minutes early and he was absolutely livid.
Yeah, could be in bed right now.
Yeah, he had still tried to be late and he was 40 minutes early.
You think being late that regularly is deliberate?
I mean, it's just it becomes your new reality. I think everyone has that. You know, I'm sure there's plenty of people listening who have had or currently have a job where you're like, I can do just about this every time and not get in trouble. And that's what you'll do. But then I hear myself saying that Faustino Asprilla cares not for trouble.
Yeah, exactly. He relishes it.
And trouble so rarely seems to find him in the first place. So I don't know. I think maybe let's be nice and say he's optimistic that he'll get there on time every day.
Which needs a little nap by the roadside.
A little nap by the roadside. You know when you're walking past the concrete and it's like, oh, that looks pretty snuggly. I wouldn't mind a little nap. That'll be fine.
Maybe a bus stop.
Yeah. Oh, I wouldn't mind that.
Anyway, he shows up 9 hours late for this game and he still makes kickoff. He turns up 9 hours late for the team meeting and he still plays and scores. And apparently at this point,
there's quite a lot of a public opinion against him, thinking like, should this guy be starting for Colombia? He's not really taking things seriously. But they've got a big game the same month in which Colombia are facing Paraguay. And that means that Tino's coming up against another of football's great eccentrics, Paraguayan keeper José Luis Chilavert, who most people will remember as the goalkeeper who takes free kicks and penalties, that rare beast.
Love that.
Love like watching clips of him where he takes a free kick and then it misses and he has to sprint back to his goal line. And penalty, if you miss a penalty, like, it seems quite high risk. But he is good at it. He scores about 50 goals in his career. Anyway, this is a big game because Paraguay and Colombia had clashed in their previous, in the return leg, which was in Colombia. And Chilavert, he's a cocky fuck. He'd been at the centre of all of it. So before the game, Chilavert announced that he'd placed a bet on himself to score in the game. And he'd taunted one of the Colombian players all game, calling him fat. Which the Colombian player is really angry about, but I also heard that this guy's nickname among his teammates was the Golden Fat Man. So.
Oh, they don't make nicknames like that anymore, do they?
They can't even that annoyed by the fat jibe.
You've got to presume something's lost in translation with the Golden Fat Man.
I think isn't gordo, which means fatty, I think it can be a term of endearment and an insult in how Australians say cunt.
Yeah, and no. Irish people as well.
Yeah, and Irish people actually.
But I think it's... Yeah, and everything is conditional on, you know, like...
Context.
Yeah, I mean, like, Jimmy Five Bellies, like, when the Gaza's pal. I'm sure, you know, if a random person said that to him for the first time, you know, it wouldn't go very well.
This big game approaches of Colombia versus Paraguay, and it's heated, but in the first half, you know, it's simmering, but nothing major happens. In the second half, there's this huge moment where Colombia crossed the ball in, Tino goes to try and boot the ball and accidentally boots a Paraguayan defender in the knee. So, you know, it's a foul. And the ref blows the whistle and immediately Chilavert, the goalkeeper, squares up to Espria and they're kind of shoving each other. And the next moment is not caught on camera. But what we do know for sure is that Espria hits Chilavert in the face because loads of people see it, including the referee who sends him off. But Espria insists that Chilavert had spat in his face and that's why he hit him. And the referee must agree because he sends Chilavert off as well. And he gives Colombia a penalty, which no one's really sure why.
He sort of lost track of what was going on there.
Anyway, so Chilavert and Espria are walking off the pitch and Espria goes and sits on the bench rather than taking the early bath. And Chilavert's furious by this and he just walks over to Espria and punches him in the face. And then one of Espria's teammates runs over and does a flying kung fu kick on Chilavert, at which point all hell breaks loose. Riot police descend. There's like this massive brawl for 10 minutes. And it's absolute chaos there. The riot police, I think, do manage to break it up and the game concludes. Colombia lose. But Chilavert is still livid. So apparently, as the riot police break it up, Chilavert just barks at Espria, "If I catch you outside, I'll kill you." And he denies ever spitting in Espria's face, but 2 years later, he spits in Roberto Carlos's face and it's caught on camera. So make of that what you will. Anyway, so the respective players return to their hotels in Asuncion that night. And Chilavert is still cursing Espria. He hates him. But little does he know that that very night, Faustino Espria will be the man who ends up saving his life. So Espria is in his hotel room in Asuncion, you know, lying on the bed with a glass of whiskey balanced on his belly. He's probably got the naughty channels on in the hotel room. And suddenly there's a phone call and he's kind of depressed and annoyed. But he answers it, "Hola." And then he hears the voice at the other end of the phone and it is a famous drug lord, a member of Escobar's cartel, who says, "Hombre, meet me in the strip club down the road in 15 minutes. And, you know, when Pablo Escobar's men call, you come.
And when you mention a strip club to Tino Espria, it's like a cartoon. It's like, thing, like the towel he's wearing around his waist is just spinning in the air. There's just a Tino Espria-shaped hole in every door from here to the strip club.
He's definitely going. There's no question. And he's on time for this engagement. So he for once.
He's not 9 hours late then.
He turns up straight away. And he says later, "When I arrived, the drug lord was with about 10 other people, all drunk and partying with pure Paraguayan women." So now I have this sort of image that he steps down into this dive bar and this drug lord's at the table. He's got like a woman draped on each shoulder and he sort of motions for Tino to have a seat. and you know, hands him a glass of aguardiente.
And, you're really painting the picture. Yeah,
and
he's
sort of, you know, he sort of gestures to the two women to give them some privacy, and they leave, and it's just him and Tino. Slides a mirror over to Tino with a line of coke on it, and Tino refuses, so the drug lord takes in. Just does a sort of sweaty snort of cocaine. And he says, Señor Asprilla, we need your authorization. And Tino's like, authorization for what? And the drug lord's like, authorization so these two men, and points to these two heavies who sort of demonstrate that they have guns in their waistbands. He says, I want authorization for these two men to stay in Paraguay and kill that fatty Chilavert. So basically he wants permission to kill Tino's nemesis, who, again, use of the insult fat, I notice. I don't think it's a term of endearment on this occasion.
Yeah, you say they seem like really cool guys, but they hadn't really caught up on the whole fat shaming thing.
Yeah.
But like, these things have to happen like bit by bit.
So. Yeah, you know. Yeah. Progress one insult at a time.
Yeah, professional killings happens first. That kind of moves around, and then slowly you start to realize that actually, Chilavert might not hear this, but your friends who have got big bellies might.
Probably one of their tamer offenses.
Yeah. It was the fat shaming for me. Yeah. Well, Escobar's been fat shaming. You're joking.
Oh, sorry. I actually really liked this guy. I didn't realize he was a fat shamer.
Anyway, so when the drug lord asks Tino if he can kill Chilavert, he just spits out his drink. He's horrified. And he's like, what? And Tino tells the story years later. He says, I said, what? Are you crazy? No, you'll destroy Colombian football. You can't do that. No. What happens on the pitch stays on the pitch.
Which does kind of sound like what would happen in a drama that he would have written about. I mean, part of me likes to imagine that there's a slight delay. There's a wee bit of a hesitation.
Well, he thinks.
It's like, huh. I do hate him. Not just because he's fat. But it will set back the cause of Colombian football. Like, I'd love to know how long he had. But then obviously, I'm sure he would draw the line. There's nothing that suggests in his... in his life that he was like, he's a cruel
he's not cruel
bad whatever, person. Yeah. I don't think we've encountered too much stuff that he's like done really bad stuff. Maybe am I eating my words? Some horrible revelation.
Guns are just for fun, not for killing.
True.
I know that sounds like a crazy thing to say about a guy who's shooting a lot of things, etc., and probably has slightly unreconstructed ideas about women and all that.
Yeah, I imagine so.
But yeah, I think I could very well imagine that he'd be like, no, this is like, no, please do not involve me in this. He doesn't deserve to die just because we had a scrap on a football pitch.
Unfortunately, we can't ask the drug lord because he was killed in a shootout in the mid-noughties, which is what enabled Tino to tell the story. What I couldn't find any shred of evidence for in all of my research was José Luis Chilavert ever saying thank you for saving my life. So apparently Chilavert was on a radio phone-in and they got a sprayer on it to discuss this game, and Chilavert just hung up. He refused to be on the call with him, which, you know, feels a bit ungrateful. Saved his life.
Yeah, I think, I mean, Chilavert just seems like a bit of a prick, really, doesn't he?
I never knew that about him. I just remembered the free kicks.
Yeah. From that, really, he just seems like a real ornery guy. Mm. And, like, he absolutely definitely spat in his face. I don't think there's anyone in it. Like, there's no way.
Anyway, back in Newcastle, they've obviously fallen apart in that first season. They came second in the league, and Newcastle are aiming to win the league again, and they've got a new secret weapon. Alan Shearer, the world's most expensive player, joins. And you know, some strikers might be a bit put out by the arrival of this super expensive player in your position, but Tino actually, he loves Shearer. He's kind of obsessed with him. Like, everyone says he's just always all over him in training, like touching him, yelling his name. Shearer tells the story of getting woken up once at 6 a.m. by this noise outside, and he looks out the window and Tino Asprilla is on his way back from a night out and is just standing on his gate chanting, Shearer, Shearer, and he loves him.
That's really adorable.
Yeah, and Tino, in a bid to kind of ingratiate himself with Shearer and his teammates, he decides that the way he's going to impress them is the videos on the team bus. So on the team bus, you know, this is before iPads and phones, everyone,
has to watch the same film on a few small TV screens. And Tino brings in one week, he brings in some Latin American music videos and puts them on. And everyone's just like, what is this fucking shite? Including Shearer, who apparently just goes, Tino, shite! And ejects the video from the player and opens a window on the bus and flings it down the A19, which is quite brutal. But Tino's not dissuaded by this. And next week he returns with another video. And as soon as he walks down the aisle of the coach with the video, all the players start jeering. They're like, oh yeah, more fucking reggaeton or whatever. And Tino goes, no, you must watch. You must watch. and then Steve Howie tells the story that, you know, the screen went from white noise to the video starts. And I should say the players are still at the ground at this moment. They've just boarded the bus. And there are hundreds of fans around the bus.
So there's kids.
There's parents with them. They've all come for a glimpse of their heroes.
And there's also like players' wives and stuff are still there. It's like a Comic-Con or something.
Yeah, there's hundreds of people there watching. They're all looking into the coach to see the players. The bus door's still open because Kevin Keegan's out there with his clipboard or whatever. Steve Howie says, the video came on and the camera just focused on these high heel shoes. It panned out and you see long legs, stockings and silk underwear. We were looking at each other thinking, surely not. We identified it straight away. It was a full-on porn movie. Before you know it, these two are getting right into it and the woman is screaming the place down. There are hundreds and hundreds of people around the bus who can see the TVs. So apparently all these dads are like hiding their children's eyes.
But pushing their wives out of the way so they can get a better look.
And everyone can just hear the sound of this porn star screaming in mock ecstasy. And then Howie says, Kevin Keegan and assistant manager Terry McDermott come up and all they can hear is the woman screaming and they're going, what's this? Get this off! And Keegan apparently is about to eject the video to get this porn film off when Tino comes running down the bus going, no, you must keep this on. This is my new missus. And that was him introducing the players to his new girlfriend, who's the porn star.
Oh, my God.
When the third season rolls around, so this is the 98-99 season, Newcastle have an injury crisis. Alan Shearer gets injured really early in the season. He's ruled out for most of it. And this is a big season because for the first time, Newcastle are playing in the Champions League and they've been drawn in a group with none other than Barcelona. So all at the start of the season, this is like the big game coming down the track. All the planning is going into how they're going to stop Luis Figo and Rivaldo. And Tino's a bit more relaxed about it. He's played in Europe before and also it's Tino. So apparently Kenny Dalglish, who's the manager at this point, he calls a big team meeting the week before the Barcelona game. And, you know, three-line whip, everyone's got to be there. Tino doesn't show up at all. And his explanation is, I was at home partying with lots of girls.
Good excuse. Do you want to try a second draft of that one before you go to the manager?
Anything else. Yeah. Any other excuse. And he says, the manager wasn't happy at all. He fined me. I was never good with timings. But when the game rolls around, you know, Dalglish doesn't really want to play Tino, but he hasn't got any other strikers. I mean, he's got Ian Rush on the bench, who's 41, I think, at this point. So he plays him, and Tino produces the performance of his life.
He scores! It's 1-0! Can he get past Serdi? He can. He's put him in. Cross it! It's another one! It's Aspria again! It's 2-0! They celebrate at Newcastle! An unbelievable situation! The cross coming in and it's a good one! It's a hat-trick! A hat-trick for Aspria! 3-0!
So he scores a hat-trick in a famous 3-2 win and he celebrates in the only way Tino could have. He says, the next morning I woke up with three girls in my bed. just a cheeky foursome in his sleepy Northumbrian village. That's really the high point of Tino's Newcastle career, that famous hat-trick.
Yeah, no, are those the last goals he ever scores?
Yeah, they are the last goals. Really? I mean, he only lasts a few more months.
Yeah, so he leaves that January and goes back. He does a season at Parma and then heads back to South America. And there he doesn't really make much of an impression. He has a string of pretty short and not very memorable spells. Or I say not very memorable, I think it's teammates at Universidad de Chile would maybe disagree because he turns up one day there with a gun to training So he's out injured at this point, so he doesn't even really need to be there, but he decides to go and sit in the stands and sits there firing blanks into the air and screaming, "I don't like the way you're running! Go faster, you bastards! We have to be champions!"
I mean, can I ask, I mean, how old is he at this point? I mean, he's...
I think he's at the end of his career.
He's not washed up, though, is he? Is he quite young-ish, relatively, when he leaves Parma?
I think he's quite washed up, isn't he, by this point?
Yeah.
He's journeyman in South America for the last
year. Yeah, he does, like, 5 years with five different teams and only makes about 12 appearances with each team. This is towards the end of it. So don't his teammates think
the gun is live ammunition as well?
How could they possibly presume such a thing? Those crazy gullible kids.
A journalist reported that he was trying to shoot his teammates, which he denies. He says they're blanks, but
just trying to gee him up.
Yeah. But then it's a bit of a surprise in 2002 when he's announced as a new signing at fourth tier Darlington. So back to the northeast. It was a bit of a bizarre era this for Darlington. They were owned by the eccentric George Reynolds, who was a former career criminal who'd done three stints behind bars for blowing up shop safes with explosives.
Incredible.
Don't make him like that anymore, do they? No. That's kind of crime.
By this point, he was reformed and he'd made a 260 million fortune flogging kitchen cabinets. I love this era of like, it's kind of before the time when fans could dream of like Qatari consortiums taking over, and it was just like, you're just hoping for some eccentric local poultry farmer
or the guy who runs the biggest glue factory in Lancashire.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
Kitchen cabinet magnate.
But yeah, he has some pretty wacky ideas. He promises Darlington Premier League football and he builds them a 25,000 capacity stadium with marble self-flushing toilets and gold-plated taps.
Astounding.
It seems a little bit excessive considering their average crowds were 2,000. But he also tries to sign Paul Gascoigne to begin with. Paul Gascoigne then pulls the plug on it and he goes for Asprilla instead. So Asprilla agrees a £17,000 a week deal plus 20% of gate receipts, a car and a rent-free flat.
Sorry, 20% of gate receipts? I mean, if you're only getting...
I know.
But then I suppose if you go from 2,000 to like, say, 5,000, then, you know, they're making...
I suppose, yeah, yeah. I like to think that he like showed Asprilla this 25,000 seat stadium. He was like, yeah, great, you'll get 20% of gate receipts. Asprilla's like, amazing, sorted. Doesn't realise that's actually going to be like 250 quid.
Or is it just an architect model of a stadium as well?
Yeah.
Rent-free flat, that's good. Deposit-free, I imagine.
But I believe that was the part that he didn't get.
He actually gets paraded around the pitch before a match against Carlisle and the fans are going mad, the 2,000 of them. But 2 days later he does a runner and heads off to the Middle East. So apparently he just rocked up at Newcastle Airport in the early hours of the morning and got on a flight to Dubai or somewhere. And the Darlington club spokesman came out with a statement that said, "We have been well and truly shafted." So from that point on, Asprilla's career kind of peters out a little bit. And nobody really hears from him for a while until 2007, when he appears naked on the cover of a Colombian gay magazine called Solo para Hombre, Only for Men. He was wearing just angel wings.
And you actually see his car.
Yeah, it's
on
like
the cover.
Full frontal nudity on the cover of this magazine. He was asked about it and he said, "Hey, I'm a man with nothing to be ashamed of."
It's quite an unlikely gay icon, isn't it?
Yeah.
Fur coat.
And I think he did in subsequent comments say, you know, he was inclusive and saying, "Hey, if they want to look, that's fine." Yeah. Which is, you know, commendable.
It's in keeping with his just like pure hedonistic attitude to everything. It's
absolutely.
Just like, if it feels good, do it.
Yeah. I kind of feel that way, which is like, he's an agent of chaos, not malevolence. Mm-hmm.
Tino's retirement is also marked by the odd legal trouble. Most famously in 2008, when Tino's at his ranch in Tulua and he decides to make an excursion into the countryside nearby. And he's travelling near the ranch with what he describes as his friends, but later transpires to be three women and a bodyguard. And eventually they reach some kind of private security checkpoint, is my understanding of what it is.
Yeah, very. I find it strange if it was like a kind of a municipal checkpoint or like a state line or something?
I think it's private security, but you know, I think...
Oh, for like a, it's like a housing complex or something. It's kind of a nice...
I think it's a bit more rural than that, but it's basically land you can't cross and there are armed guards at this land. And these guards won't let Tino and his friends cross the checkpoint. And, you know, most people would probably just think, okay, should we check if there are any other routes on Google Maps or like at least plead with these guys. Instead, Tino just pops to the car where he pulls out a machine gun and proceeds to spray 29 bullets at the checkpoint. I should say no one was hurt. He sprays them in the air. But, you know, pretty serious crime by anyone's measure.
And they let him past after that.
I don't know actually what they do. I assume they wave him through. But they do put in a call to the police, understandably, to inform them.
That will happen, yeah.
Yeah, even those of us who agree that Tino should be given every largesse, I think even we would say, yeah, that's probably a job for the old
old Bill.
You know, this, you know, does this land him in the slammer?
It lands him under house arrest, ultimately. Well, I assume he spent the night.
So he got the Pablo Escobar deal.
Yeah, well, yeah. He gets it on his ranch in Tuluá as his prison, which is a pretty sweet deal.
It is.
You know, letting off 29 rounds. But Tino is not content with this soft sentence. He says, I think it's a bit premature for me to be convicted. In fact, it reminds me of a movie I once saw called Minority Report with Tom Cruise.
My favourite quote of this entire life.
In which people end up in jail even before you've committed the crime. Which makes no sense because he did commit the crime.
Also, I like that, you know, he wasn't sure if enough people had seen it, so he's like, and I'm going to give you a pressy of the basic idea.
Like, pre-crime is this concept. Yeah. So he feels he's done nothing wrong.
I mean, has he though? I mean, maybe all of our, you know, humdrum ideas about morality, bullets, all that kind of stuff, you know, Tino has been right every time. He's always come through. He's always managed to get away with everything. And, you know, he's still standing on his big ranch, on his horse. You know, where are we? It's Tino's world and we all just live in it. That's it.
Well, Tino's world is basically his ranch after this, because he is confined there under a court order.
So for how long? What is the sentence?
I don't know, actually. At some point, the house arrest ends because he's back at large. But for a while, he's confined there and he's basically stuck just playing with his horse, Lucas, who he grows really close to. And there's a video at some point of Tino teaching the horse to play football while riding him dressed as T-Rex. I recommend you Google it. So the horse is sort of kicking this giant football and Tino's on it dressed as a pink T-Rex.
That sounds like something that you type into one of those AI image generators. Can you give me Tino Esprit wearing a T-Rex costume on the top of a horse that he's trying to teach play football?
Now, James Richardson, I think, of previously mentioned of Gazzetta Football Italia and you know, Toddy Football and everything, he claims that this is not Faustino Esprit. Mm. With a degree of avidity that I think he's like really gone down a rabbit hole. He's like, I can see him like in, you know, CSI style zooming and enhancing. But apparently there is also a horse trainer who sometimes does things like this. In so
Tino says it's him, doesn't he? He insists.
But does that even add credence to the idea that it is him? Or I want it to be true. Tino wants us to want it to be true. So I'm ready to say that it's true. But it's an amazing video anyway. And even if it's not actually Tino, it is spiritually Tino.
Agreed. Anyway, Tino's love affair with his horse is about to come under strain because he takes Lucas to a nearby country fair, which I think is basically just sort of piss up. It's like a horse show. There's 2,000 people there. Tino ties the horse up in the saloon and proceeds to just get absolutely wasted with some locals. And at some point during this afternoon, he drunkenly agrees to let someone ride his horse for a few hours. So he's like, yeah, yeah, take it. So someone takes Lucas off and the horse is not seen again for the rest of the day. And it turns out he's been stolen and Tino's absolutely distraught. He goes public, offers a reward of you know, several million pesos. Do check the rate.
Not quite porn money, but getting there.
And he spends the next 4 months tracking Lucas down, and eventually the police find him in a nearby town in a stable, abandoned. In the town of Florida.
Just doing kick-ups.
Yeah, just
he's putting in the practice at least.
It was a football camp. And they are reunited. A tearful Tino is reunited with his beloved horse. But he's about to lose another dear friend. Police in the seedy tourist town of Cartagena raid a local brothel and they arrest the brothel madam who's running the show. And this is huge news in the region. Everyone's in shock. And Asprilla is upset for slightly different reasons. He releases a video in which he says, "Please free her. We are lost without the madam. There is nothing happening. All the yachts are empty and the area has no life."
That's the best. The most incredible. Like, please, if not for her, for the economy. Come on.
For the oligarchs and their yachts.
Yeah.
And then he says, "Think about it. The madam's unemployed workers, 400 girls. That's a lot of nice females."
So his motives are fairly
clear. Is that a direct quote?
Yeah, that's a direct quote from the video.
Oh, my God. Okay.
And apparently the Colombian Attorney General take the rare step of releasing a statement in response to Asprilla's statement. They say, "The madam has a criminal record for heroin trafficking and illegal entrance into the United States."
Yeah, but have you
weighed... Do they call her the madam as well?
Yeah, the madam, which is what Tino calls her too.
Have you weighed that up against the fact that, oh, there's lots of really horny guys on yachts? Like,
it has no life. I've actually been to Cartagena and it is seedy.
Is it?
It's just like, it's really touristy and it's just like constant coke dealers coming up to you.
Okay.
It should be really nice. It's all this like...
Yeah, because all the coke.
Well, cheap cocaine. But it is just a bit horrible.
So is it like...
It's gone downhill since the madam.
Yeah, I've been to Cartagena. All the yachts are empty. Yeah. The area's got no life.
Yeah.
Because this one madam was shut down for trafficking. Yeah, I just love the audacity of that everyone's like, oh my God, they've shut down this crime ring. And he's just thinking, shit, what am I going to do next week? I've got a holiday booked. That is the last of Tino's big public scandals. I mean, looking around what he's up to these days, he's occasionally seen at Parma where he joins the ultras in the stands.
That's right, with a megaphone and everything.
Cheering on the other ultras.
He's done some fairly boring Colombian reality TV shows, which I did watch a little bit of, which I don't really have very much to report. It seems like Colombian TV isn't the sort of hyper-editing, very high drama stuff that we might know from British or American.
Yeah, no, that's Venezuelan. Bollywood.
Yeah. So, it seems like he definitely has a profile as a Carter. He kind of goes around. I could imagine him, maybe he's a bit like a Gaza kind of a Carter. But
minus the sadness.
I think with a little bit less sadness, but like more drama, weirdly, in certain ways. I mean, certainly, I think you can say that. I think you can say, like, every single thing he did seemed to just turn into like a Wile E. Coyote cartoon.
I can't really think of any victims to any of his
normally
escapades.
With these kind of characters you check the Wikipedia and that's some depressing stuff.
Like, when we're saying all that and then just imagine if 29 bullets were flying at you and you're just rural security guard. So obviously we're I'm talking nonsense because these are crazy things to do, even objectively bad things to do, but like you said, there's not a trail of victims. Everyone who ever played with him seems to love him. Even Keith Gillespie in that one that I watched, he seemed to quite like him as a character, but I think he thinks, no, that's why we kind of lost the lead. But
weird how accurate his description of his life. Lots of sex, no rules, and pure life. Like that's pretty much it. His philosophy. I'm not sure there's much else to say, is there?
No, I don't think so,
I kind of thought we'd run out of stories, but you kept coming up with ones that I'd never heard before, which were just, such a feast. I just love them.
Yeah.
Really, to be honest.
Who couldn't? All right, well, thanks a lot, Seamus. Thanks very much for joining us, as ever.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Zach.
Thank you.
And thanks for listening.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market. Mom. Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.